Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. My host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, wrestler, producer, agent, trainer. He's done it all. He's seen it all. He's even trained CM Punk. He is, of course, Mr. Ace Steele. Ace, welcome back. How you doing?
How are you, John? Good to be back on here. It's been quite a while.
Yeah, it has been. A little too long. Too long.
Yeah, a little too long. Was it 2016, maybe? Has it been that long?
Yeah, 2017. Yeah. Yep.
2017. Okay. Somewhere. Yeah. I didn't look it up specific, but I knew it's been a while. I knew it had been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. What's going on in your world? What are you up to?
Oh, man. All kinds of stuff. Working with TNA as a producer at the moment. Loving that. Loving the atmosphere there. Just a great backstage feel. Working on, we'll talk more about this later, I'm sure, but working on getting a wrestling school going down here in Orlando, Florida. Because Florida needs another wrestling school. Right. There's so many down here. But anyway, I've just seen the need to go ahead, you know, and fulfill my itch for coaching people. Just living life, doing workshops all around too, coaching, training. You know, I love coaching in-ring and training wrestlers. Just got back from Kansas City the other day. And we've got the TNA pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks in New Orleans. So yeah, it's ramping up to get really busy.
That's awesome. And when I think of Kansas City, I think of Harley. Is a lot of your training based on Harley Race?
My training is specifically based on Harley Race. I utilize Harley Race training, the methods, everything I learned from him, I've decided to focus on quite a bit. A lot of things that are needed in our business today. And if you go back and watch Harley, very methodical, very laid out. His matches were precision. And the things he instilled upon me during my time with him, he was my agent for Japan, for Pro Wrestling NOAH. I coached at his school here and there, in and out. You know, he also was a significant factor in myself getting a contract at WWE back in the day. He was a huge proponent of me, and I would sit side by side. You know, I bought the gym next door to his wrestling school at one point, so I would see him on a daily basis. Like, it got to be just, you would think, like, oh my God, Harley Race is here every day. And just got to be, Harley, how are you? you know, but I would go in and sit with him, and I'd watch tapes, I'd watch footage, I'd pick his brain. I wish I picked his brain even more as I'm older and I've got more questions and things that I just wish I would have just, you know, just bugged him so much with. But yeah, we're gonna focus on that.
Man, Harley, one of the all-time greats, obviously. But what an awesome guy to be able to learn from and then pay that forward and teach somebody else something from Harley.
Yes, indeed. I mean, everything that he's given to me, and he never charged me a dime for it. It was just by chance that I wrestled for him. He liked my work. He liked my work ethic. I went down to make a connection with him further, started wrestling shows for him at his promotion. And that spawned into, and my main goal always was to get to Japan, and Pro Wrestling Noah was the premier location at the time to go. It was the biggest one, as Misawa had defected from All Japan at the time, and he basically brought the whole crew with him. And I got to work for Noah, and that was under, you know, it was under Harley. So to come back and talk to him about every tour, to hear from him about, you know, what I should do on each tour in ring and all this good stuff. I mean, the fact that I get to pay it forward and give these nuggets of information that I've gathered, you know, from him after all these years, like I'd give them out coaching at, you know, the Performance Center or wherever I coached, you know, since jumping back into the training game. Now I'm going to focus on that primarily. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of stuff for me dealing with Harley Race and, you know, definitely in the very near future.
The last time I saw Harley was actually, unfortunately, almost right before he passed. He did an autograph signing in Philly. And they're like, hey, I think it was his son was with me. He said, hey, you want to just help him? Because he was still in a wheelchair at that point. You want to just help bring him in. So, you know, I'm helping them, like, bring him in. I'm like, oh, he's sitting right next to us. I had Ronnie Garvin. So he's, you know, he came, he's with us. He's like, is this Philly? And I was like, yeah. He goes, what a shithole. I was like, man, he still got it. He's still like, you know, he still got it.
Yeah, his later years, it was, you know, a different time. There were a lot of memory things that were going on with him. The guy who was playing his son, you know, on for the promotion. I just talked to his biological son, Justin, not long ago. They talked about, he told me about they filmed a little bit of The Dark Side of the Ring, and that he himself has a book coming out talking about his experiences with dad over the years. And Harley was just, no matter what, like, it was great to see him, and, you know, just to see, he always had that spark and that wit with him.
Yeah, definitely. Leland was with him, obviously, not his son, but Leland was there that day with him.
Gotcha.
Why Dark Side on Harley, though? I don't even get that. How could there?
I honestly don't either. I mean, you're going to tell a story about a wrestler that had a marriage that didn't work out. I mean, I really, that's kind of, I'm not gonna say it's par for the course, but it happens so much.
50-50 in real life too. Yeah.
It becomes, you know, cliche. I mean, you know, he had a lot of automobile accidents, and I don't feel like he had many, you know, he had ups and downs like any other normal person in the world. He just happens to be Harley Race and he's double tough. So I don't know. I think sometimes the dark side moniker, they're reaching for something there when, you know, you don't, there's not so much dark. You know, you look at the dark side of the Road Warriors. Hawk had some things go on with him, and he had a story, you know, past with substances and things. But I don't think Animal was still alive when they filmed that. So when you go into it, you know, sure, he could talk about Hawk, but he himself, I don't, you know, didn't have any real tragedies in his personal life. Or, you know, you could probably do one on Dick Slater, which would seem more like a dark side to me from the stories I've heard. I don't know anything firsthand. But yes, firsthand from Harley, you know, I don't know. It's interesting, and of course I'll view, but the man still holds high regard in my heart, of course, for the things he's done for me. My wife as well. My wife trained with him as well. She's younger than myself by 9 years, so she went there and was trained when he was still involved with doing more of that. And he didn't always hop up in the ring, but from ringside, he obviously, you're talking about an 8-time NWA heavyweight champion that could tell you what looks right, what looks wrong, when to do this, when to do that. Those, like, she'll still tell me stories. I look at her and I'm going to go, why have you never told me that? She's like, I don't know. Just, you know, never popped in my head, you know, because we have great stories that line up, but we do Harley at different times, you know. Just in his later, you know, just the way he gets when he gets older and more surly. I used to ask Terry Taylor all the time, at the Performance Center. I'm like, you knew a version of Harley that I didn't. I knew a guy I saw day in, day out. Of course, the mad respect I had for the man. But you knew a guy that walked in to that locker room and people just got quiet. You know, you didn't want to say the wrong thing, piss him off, rub him the wrong way. Like, you knew that guy that carried the pistol, that was protecting himself in his Halliburton, you know, and carried that 10 pounds of gold and just sit down and light up a smoke and not care who's around, you know. Just fascinating to hear stuff about the Harley from back then to the one I know.
And I interviewed Flair not that long ago, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and yeah. He was telling me, like, Harley race stories. He basically was saying, and this is Flair, you know, everyone considers him the GOAT. He was basically saying Harley race is a god. If there was no Harley race, there's no Flair. And then he was going on telling awesome stories. I'm like, oh, would that really be Dark Side of the Ring? These awesome bar stories of him beating two guys up at once. He said he punched one guy this way, elbowed him, and then when he came back, he headbutted him with the back of his head. I was like, that's not like Dark Side. I mean, those are great stories, but it's also Flair is saying that about Harley. You know what I mean? Like, Flair's pumping him up like he's like, oh, Harley's way better than I was, like, which is crazy to say.
Sure. Oh, indeed. Well, yeah, I mean, mad props to always to anyone that puts Harley in that. I mean, but when you think about it, when you watch a lot of the Flair, I've been watching a lot of Flair Harley lately, different matches, different time frames. And like, there's a couple out there specifically that have popped up. It always sparks your memory when you see clips on Instagram. And it was one with Harley and Flair from Japan, and they just start off with the high spot. But then their styles, when you look at, you know, Harley had the knee drop, Flair had a knee drop, his version. They do the off the top rope bump, the big one, getting caught, just taking your own bump into the corner. But that was the style back then. And those are things I want to bring back to people that they miss. Everyone's doing power bombs instead of taking their own bump, which that was always the fun part to me, is, you know, learning to run into things or bounce off of things and, you know, suspend disbelief, really. But yeah, for Flair, of course, for Flair to put him over that way. Steamboat, many a time I've asked him about he and Harley, and he's like, Harley always liked me. He always took me to Japan when he went. He always took me to Japan when he went.
When I look at Harley too, and somebody online, remember I mentioned it, people were like, oh, he was so out of his prime at this point, was the Hogan feud in the late 80s when he had those matches with Hogan. I was like, he was, you could say later on in his career, he was not out of his vulnerable prime. Those matches are awesome. Those Texas death matches, I mean, they're awesome.
Oh, hell yeah. Those are wouldn't that lead up to the one where he went through the table and hurt himself with the band wrapped around and smacked him. But holy hell, those are great. Those are phenomenal brawls. Like, that's great Hogan stuff. I mean, that's, you can say exactly later on, but, you know, I would dare say not exactly his prime. I mean, look at him moving all over the place. Even when he works the Ultimate Warrior, watch when he works that guy. That's the epitome of him taking care of himself and bumping all over for this guy. That he certainly doesn't want to get picked up by this guy and dropped in the wrong way. So he's just taking care of himself, but still making that guy such a star. Like, I mean, that's what it's all about. Like, he knew his position and his role, and to be so respected as he was, to walk in there and humbly do that, because he told me, it's iconic now, especially now that it's in the movie where he wore the red, white, and blue robe, and they had the boots, the red, white, boots that they remade. He told me that those boots, he told me that he threw those boots out after he lost the Flair. He said he threw them in the garbage, is what he told me. And I looked at him like, you really did? He's like, yep. He's like, I threw them in the trash. He thought that was the end of his career. He didn't think he was, you know, when he went back to, you know, everybody was fighting. Central States was not good. And they had purchased St. Louis by that point, and the business was not good. So he figured he would join them. And, you know, he didn't think that was coming. He didn't see that around the corner for sure.
Man, the Hogan matches too. He's taking bumps on the floor, like Hogan slamming on the floor, suplex on the floor. And this is no mats are out there. Literally just taking the bumps before. They're both bleeding. I mean, the matches are awesome, him and Hogan. I love those matches.
Yeah, now you're going to make me go back and watch that. Like, I go in spurts of what Harley, like, eras I'm at. Like, I had one on my hard drive of, I was flying home from Kansas City, actually. And it was Harley and Steamboat from 1978. And just watching this from the Carolinas, and I was just amazed how he's taken an infant, so to speak, an infant Steamboat, and leading him by the hand through this match. And then Steamboat, I don't know exactly, I'd have to see how green he was at that point, but you couldn't tell. I say as an infant, because just because that's earlier in his career and he's working the heavyweight champion of the world, who is the man when he comes to town. Like back then in 1978, Harley was just on fire as, you know, the traveling champion, but the bumps he could take. And so now I'm going to have to go back and watch some Hogan matches.
I even recently typed it into YouTube because I wanted to check out the MSG match again. Then I cast it and I watch it on my TV, but I'm like, oh, but Philly came up, and then, you know, like, and then Saturday Night's Main Event, like, so they all came up. Like, now I've got to watch them all. Shit.
Sure.
Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. Good
love
stuff.
Doing that.
Yeah.
Going down the rabbit hole, if you will.
Oh, always, always.
Now with Noah, he was actually booking the US talent over there, or he's just getting you guys bookings.
No, he was booking US talent over there. When Noah formed, Misawa and the office had come over to America, and I was not at this, but I'd known about it because I had my finger on the pulse of what was going on. They had come to Harley's, and it did kind of like a working tryout session. So they had some guys come in. So obviously Harley had some of his own guys there. A good buddy of mine, Matt Murphy, was there. My brother-in-law, Superstar Steve Fender, was there and was picked to go to the dojo. Matt Murph, like there were some younger guys there and some older guys. Like even at that point, Ray Gordy, Terry Gordy's son and also brother of Miranda Gordy, he was starting out. And while Terry Gordy was still alive, there's a picture somewhere of Terry Gordy talking to Harley. See the Harley? No, he's talking to Misawa, I think. And you can see Harley in the background. I know it's him having a smoke because he's way in the back by a garage door. I was like, that's Harley. But Ray Gordy had gone over for maybe a tour or two. I don't know how many for sure. But they came here to just kind of audition U.S. talent to bring them over. They did the same in California, which kind of helped me get over as well. They made a stop there, and that's where they went to APW, and they found Mike Modest, Donovan Morgan, Bison Smith, a few other people that I don't know that came from those guys. But just in knowing all these people and getting around and knowing Harley had that, like Harley was my first guy to start agent, you know, trying to get me over there. So he would book people. He booked the U.S. talent to go over there all the time, except for the Modest and Morgan guys. Like any of those guys went through them. Harley was the guy to get people over because a lot of times he was bringing like Amore came over for quite a long time, who teamed with brain fart. Oh my gosh, he's hurt right now. Takayama. Sorry, my bad. Takayama. He had come over here in the States for a long time and stayed at like in the Ozarks. He had actually rented an apartment, but they stayed with Harley and BJ Race at the time. But he was in the States for quite a long time. And so when the time came and they approached me, Harley was the one to, you know, send me over. He had all my information. The office had seen me and Harley would book me. So which means he tried to, I got all my tours from Harley, but they would also send some others in between to see, you know, who they could get over there. You know, Trevor Rhodes at the time, Trevor Murdoch went over some, did the dojo over there as well. So he supplied quite a bit of talent.
This is random about Noah. Did you ever notice Takeshi Morishima looks like somebody very, very similar? Have you ever noticed that about Morishima from Noah?
Similar? I always thought he was the Japanese Terry Gordy to my, you know, is what I thought. But is that where you're shooting? Is that where you're going?
Yes, I exactly. Because I mentioned it to somebody and I said, is that his illegitimate son? And they said,
oh,
they said, I don't know. And I was like, he literally looks like exactly like him, except for he's Japanese, like same exact body type, same height, like everything.
100%. I thought Morishima was awesome. He was awesome to work with too. I loved working him. I loved working everybody there. There was very few that I really wasn't, you know, I'm living my dream wrestling in Japan, but I thought he was excellent. Like he came to the States and worked. He was a Ring of Honor champion at one point, I believe, too. It just baffles me that at the time the Fed was looking at big muscle heads instead of grabbing a guy that can freaking work. And, you know, looked at like, oh, you're out of shape. And it's like, what do you mean he's out of shape? He's in great shape. He's Japanese. He looks different. He's young. Watch his hustle. Watch his work. He's one of the most authentic workers they had, you know.
Yep.
Like that lost, that's a lost art in a lot of ways. But a guy like him, agreed. I always said that about him. He was like a Japanese Terry Gordy for sure.
He was awesome. Kenta Marufuji. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were stacked. Kenta Kobashi, Misawa, Jun Nakayama. I mean, they were loaded. They literally took all the good guys from all Japan. I mean, they had everybody. They were awesome, except for Kawada. Basically, kind of left the business. But yeah,
everyone but Kawada and Fuchi, Masafuchi, who I never met, but respectable, awesome worker. Even down, you know, to the office, and one of the referees that was great over there to me. He was an old time wrestler over there and became a referee. So he just, Mighty was a great wrestler, wrestled a lot in Canada. So he'd always talk to me about Vern Gagne and Edouard Carpentier, and he stole the flip from him. So he'd do the flip. And so I really pop huge when I see a match. There's so much more that's popping out nowadays on YouTube, and I'll just randomly, you know, part of my subscription somewhere will come up on YouTube to one of the channels, and I'll see Mighty Inoue and Tiger Mask 2 Misawa versus the British Bulldogs, and I'm like, oh my god, it's Mighty against Dynamite. Like, and you can see the respect they have for him because he's such a smooth old time worker, you know, much like Fuchi, like along that same line. But yeah, all those guys over, they took everybody. They were the promotion back then. I mean, New Japan had a dip in, you know, their attendance and everything. And, you know, of course, All Japan did as well because the mass exodus. But what a time to be over there. I'm so fortunate that I got to go over at a time when, you know, they were just big business over there.
Man, once they did that, then they were the ones getting the big dome shows. And Noah was, was this. They were awesome. Even a little bit, I guess probably a little bit before your time, when Vader came back there, he was freaking awesome. It's like, geez, right, Scorpio time, is awesome. Yeah, and then Scorpio's great. Yep.
Scorpio. Oh, yeah, there's another one. God, Scorpio was so great to me over there. Always helped me out, taught me, you know, helped me out with the style, where to place things in matches and talk after the matches and help me out and just hang out in general. Like, he was just good people to me. Took care of me so much over there, learned from him, worked with him quite a bit. Alex Shelley just reminded me of a match that we did in Ring of Honor once, I think in Philly, actually.
It was a four-way. I was there.
You were there? Oh, yes. Shit.
Essington, right? Was it Essington or was it Philly?
I don't know.
It's the same place, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. Shelley brought this up to me at TNA, and I was like, holy cow. I was like, I think I want to say that surfaced somewhere. I'm sure I have it on DVD, but I was so excited to get to work Scorp. And though I don't think we did a whole lot except like a nice series at the beginning working with each other, I think the whole point of the match was a vehicle for Jay Lethal bringing him up at the time. But oh man, just yeah, good stuff. Like Scorp was just awesome. He was awesome to work. And you were there early Ring of Honor stuff, huh?
Oof. Great stuff. Me and my buddy used to go to so many ROH shows back in the day. Like anytime in Jersey, but anytime basically New Jersey, New York, Philly, Connecticut, sometimes we would try to go to as many shows. The ROH at that point was awesome. I thought WWF at that point sucked.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Cena era, the PG era, whatever, you Ruthless Aggression. I didn't like it.
I'll tell you what, there is a lot. And again, my wife is 9 years younger than I am. So you figure she got into wrestling 2009, I think she did, is when she started training. So you figure she was a fan all the way to that point, and she was a WWF fan. So now I'm showing her NWA and why I'm such an NWA fan, because of the realism it drew me in, as opposed to, of course I latched on to Bret Hart's single run, and when he and Mr. Perfect, like I got smarter as a fan and watched the workers and kind of negated all the cartoon stuff. But anyway, she'll pull something up, and I'll look and I go, I have no clue, because, not to be arrogant, but I was wrestling at the time. So I didn't watch that. I didn't watch mainstream wrestling. I just didn't. Even Eddie Guerrero's run, I did not see. Like, I would watch the big pay-per-views or hear of a match that he may have had with someone, or watch some of Regal stuff, you know, guys like that, or Fit when he came back for the second run. But there's so much, like you're saying, that I didn't watch because I was busy doing this and trying to do that stuff, you know.
It's funny, that era is like certain guys like Finley, Regal, Benoit is awesome, Eddie, obviously until he passed, but there were so many awesome guys. I love those guys, but there was so much other crap and like Triple H was kind of not being very good at that point. Cena, a bit overrated. You know, Batista, I kind of liked him, but, you know, he's not really my style. It was much different. But when I used to go to the ROH shows, I was like, my God, this guy Bryan Danielson is awesome. Loki is awesome. This guy Samoa Joe is awesome. How is he not signed? Yeah. It was just like one after another. And then you, Cabana and Punker came in. It was like, wow, I love the Second City Saints. And then Christopher Daniels there. So much better for me as a fan as I was getting older. Like, I just enjoyed going to those shows so much more than watching crappy WWF.
Oh, well, thank you. That's that's quite the compliment. It was such a different era. Like, we were all hungry. Even when you say, like, a Christopher Daniels comes in, who would have been working with TNA more, probably at some point did, because they pulled them all. Yep. But, like, AJ Styles came in early. You've got, I'll throw him out there, John Walters, who I still talk to this day. What a hell of a talent John Walters was. You know, Shelley was rising up, and he was just an, I used the word infant before, but he was just an infant then, you know. He told me the other day about stuff like that. He's like, man, you worked on shows that I was still putting rings up on. I said, oh, come on. He's like, no, I'm being serious. When you would work Michigan shows, you know, because he just gave me a huge hug and welcomed me into the TNA locker room. Like, I've always loved Alex Shelley. But guys like him, they weren't even just blowing up just yet. And we were just hungry. And we all aspired to be all those guys that you mentioned before. I know I did. I gravitated because I was never a big guy. I was never going to be tall. The most I could do is fill out. But I wanted to be that style. The minute I saw, you know, a William Regal, or I got to see any, like, really tight European wrestling, like, I wanted to do that. I wanted to, you know, and the fact that I would get to coach with those guys years later is just, it's surreal to me that I would have a class and show up and teach a class with Fit, you know, I just to sit there and listen to him, or him to say, okay, well, you got something today. You know, Regal, anytime Regal would walk into the performance center, and he can't help himself when he's talking, all right, he's got to demonstrate. I know how it feels. So you turn around, and I know we lock up and we start, you know, just wrestling, whatever it is, it's wrestling. Nothing is called. It's just, we just wrestle. I know the style. I know, you know, my distinct honor to do these things. But yeah, back then, that's what we all wanted to do. Well, you look at Brian and Regal, their relationship, you know, like, we all just all of us wanted to be those. We wanted to be like those guys in that form, you know, in our own way, of course, but just that's just the style of wrestling and the, just the crispness and the physicality without killing each other. You know, we realized after beating each other up here and there that, okay, this is not, the art is not killing each other. The art is putting it in, but, you know, we got to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over again. Like, there's no good in, you know, walking out with half your arm hanging off. So, but yeah, what a time. What a time to be just so hungry.
Look like you're killing each other, but don't actually kill each other.
Yes. Yes, exactly. You hear it. You hear it some nowadays, but yeah, look like it. Don't kill each other. I learned that. We all did once we all went to Japan. I'd always heard that there was a lot of shooters over there, and there's nothing shoot in my body whatsoever. I wrestled one year in high school, but I don't have a shoot background. So I get over there and I'm thinking, my gosh, what if someone shoots on me? Like, I'm just going to have to do my best to defend myself, you know? Yep. And you know, the only thing Harley taught me is a nice front face lock. He taught me that in a shoot sleeper. So I'm hoping that, you know, I don't have to utilize anything that I think I know. And it was just all working. It was all working. It was, you know, crisp and tight, but just, you know, because you're wrestling with all those guys over there. They spent their lives to get into that. You know, and I think the number one guy that I remember locking up with and just wrestling with was Segura, who I call the Japanese angle. He does the angle slam. He does the angle lock. He was an Army wrestler. He wrestled for the Army, you know, and they put those guys like through such hell to go through that dojo. I thought, this guy's going to just grab me and slam me. And he just worked. And we always had a great relationship, a great rapport, just working and just tight stuff. I'm searching for somebody had it and I have to track it down. They ribbed me one night and I don't know if it's a rib or whatever they were doing. I had one tour where I wrestled just about every junior heavyweight on tour. I wrestled Kanemaro, Marufuji, I wrestled in like a big six-man junior match in Sapporo, untelevised this was, but all these house show matches, I wrestled all the juniors and just had good matches night after night because they're so good. But my first night in at Corken Hall, on the board, I think I opened the show with a 20-minute, it says 20-minute Broadway, Segura, Ace Steel. And I looked around. The boys told me and said, Ace, you got a Broadway tonight with Segura. I go, ah, go F yourself. And I turned around and said, oh, shit, you guys aren't kidding. Segura was very young at the time. So calling it on the fly was not quite there. It was there enough. But so I had to think, like, I can't call a 20-minute match.
Right.
Like, we still have the language barrier. Wrestling-wise, we could talk. But I don't know what to call for. Like, I didn't have it in my head to call a 20-minute match. So I still love the match. Just at the end of the match in a Broadway, I'm sure people know by now after listening to this, they know a Broadway is a time limit draw. Yep. But at the end, he puts me in the cross arm breaker, you know, and he's got me. And Mighty's our ref, so which was a great thing because I probably could have utilized him more for speaking, but I was kind of blown away that I have to do this Broadway. And we wanted to get me caught in the armbar right before the bell, so that way I wouldn't have to tap. We did the armbar a little too early, so I probably had it on me 15, 20 seconds. Like, the arm should have been gone, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Him.
And yep. He's like, I was like, Mighty, okay, Daijobu? And he said, okay, your arm should be broke, but okay. I was like, I know, damn, you know. But, man, just such good stuff. Just such good stuff.
I love that. Now, as far as ROH, how do you actually get in back in the day, 02, 03, you know, whatever era that, I guess it was 03, really. How'd you guys get in there? Like, is that Gabe Sapolsky kind of recruiting
that
you?
That was Gabe. Yeah, Gabe booked me for that 100%. Punk and Cabana had been a hot match on the indies, and they were going. So we branch off from, now mind you, our training center back in the day was called the Steel Domain, myself and Danny Dominion. We wrestled in Minnesota. It was the only place that we at first could find footage because it was hard to find footage back then. So you needed a place that had a camera on you. And they had local, like, cable access television. And it was kind of it was the golden trip for our trainees to go with us to Minnesota because it was finally good shows, big shows, stuff like that, rather than the indie crap that was around. And we took a carload with us to Minnesota. And through that, we started doing a lot, and those guys got better and better. And then the only advice that we ever told them, and they took advantage of, and they listened to, was go everywhere you can. I said this the other day at my workshop in Kansas City. I said, you guys that are here and doing well here, I've seen you here for a while. You need to leave. You need to go wrestle other places. And because some kid was like, how do I wrestle for these independents? But I said, you need to go there. Just go. Leave this town and go and find the work, because you know, you have to search it out. So they did just that. And I will dare say Dave Prazak helped them out. Dave Prazak from Shimmer fame does commentary now for GCW, a lot of commentary. But behind the scenes, he was always handing our tapes out. Did a lot for me as well. But he got Punk and Cabana around, so they would take their match in different variations, of course. They didn't do the exact same match, but you know what I mean. They would wrestle here, and there. And when Gabe started up Ring of Honor, he got a hold of those guys and happened to be talking to Punk on the phone. And he said, I need to know some different guys. Who else is in the Midwest? And Punk and I were roommates at the time. And he said, well, there's my trainer, Ace Steel. And he goes, oh, I've heard of Ace. I've never seen him. And we happened to be wrestling, I think, for Norm Connors. And it was at IWC in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And so I popped in the car. We went that way. And mind you, at this point, I would go down for shows for Harley. So when the Steel Domain deal finished up for us in Minnesota, I just started making my own trek going different ways. So did Danny Dominion. Everyone just kind of split up. And I went and started working for Harley. We'd all kind of do IWA Mid-South, but they went that way. So I go and I worked for Norm Connors, met Doug Gentry, who was filming a lot back then. And Doug took my tape back directly to Gabe, and Gabe was like, yeah, let's book him. And then we started the Raven feud. At the time, there wasn't that many shows and there wasn't that many opportunities to get me over. But eventually I started traveling more and more, and, you know, I'm sure if you've gone to all those Rahway rec centers, that's funny for me to say. Sounds like, yes, I'm saying it incorrectly. Over the Rahway to the rec center, there's so many times we wrestled there. I can't even think of how many matches, but what a fun venue to be in. I always remember hot crowds, yep, at that place. But yeah, that's, you know, definitely through Gabe. Gabe gave me a lot of opportunities early on.
And the Rexplex in Elizabeth, New Jersey, another awesome venue.
Is that it? Rexplex, yeah.
That's another one. Yeah, there is the Railway Rec Center too. Yeah, there's a bunch of good ones. The Murphy Rec Center in Philly. Although
Murphy Rec was the first one. I shared the memory, and I'd have to search through it because it's on VHS. I couldn't find it on the Honor Club because I don't think they put everything up in the world because they'd have to convert it. But my entrance into Ring of Honor was against Jay Briscoe. They put me on a dark. So Jay and I had a dark. And Mark couldn't wrestle at the time.
Wasn't old enough, right?
Right. So he was, I think, ringside maybe. Or maybe not. However it was. But I worked Jay on the undercard. And I just remember us having like a nice snug match because, again, we didn't know any better just yet. We thought we just have to go at it, you know, in a working fashion, but still a little more snug than normal. And that got me more of the opportunity of, you know, that look at like, okay, you're in, let's go. And that's when Gabe had the idea for the Second City Saints to formulate after the Raven match, the tag match with, he was with Cabana and against Punk and I. I just watched that not too long ago, which just made me laugh. Just crazy. I really have no memory of it. I have no memory of it at all. But except for, you know, like, I had to watch it. I knew where it was, and so those things just trickled on and carried on. And what a time! Again, what a time to have such a hungry locker room.
And you think about it, Raven really put Punker on the map because right after that feud, I mean, he just blew up. Everyone was like, wow, look at this guy. This guy's awesome. He could wrestle. Mm-hmm. He could talk. He's got a mouth on him. Like, it just, he was like perfect. And the perfect antithesis of Raven, because look at Raven, you know, maybe drinking and drugging and all this other stuff. And he's straight edge and he's better than you, even though somebody else stole that catchphrase recently. He won't say who, but I'm better than you. And you know it. It's CM Punk used to say that. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Well, he's a big CM Punk fan. That Raven feud was just great stuff. I mean, I read a quote from Raven not too long ago. I think it was a few days ago because I thought about it. And, you know, how things just pop up and float up on the internet now. And I guess Raven commented on it saying, because Punk put him over and said, you know, I was married to Raven, so I learned so much about things. And Raven commented that he's like, wow, I did, you know, I really thought he just looked at me like I was just some grumpy asshole. You know, you got to do this, kid, you got to do that, kid, blah, blah, blah. He goes, but, you know, that's, you know, very flattering that he took what I gave him and then went on and then gives me credit for a lot of things. You know, it's one thing I think you'll find with Punk, all the things he gives. If you listen to his Cauliflower Alley speech, you know, it was really a heartfelt thing to the people. He talked a lot about Harley and that, but a lot about the people that paved the way for all of us to be doing what we're doing, but the people that specifically gave him like so much. And being being married to Raven was huge for him. Like, it was very odd at the time. I did TNA in the early days.
Yep.
And then Punk had gone the first time with me. I will dare say that he wasn't quite ready for prime time at that point. The showing wasn't as good. Flip-flop till I wasn't working with with them anymore. And then he gets into the Raven thing where he's in, I can't remember what they were called, the Gathering?
Yeah.
The Flock. Yeah, it wasn't the Flock, but he was in Raven's new Flock version. But in Ring of Honor, he was shooting a Raven. So it was like, I think they finally figured it out and got out of it.
Yep.
So they could make sense of it. But instead of just putting him against Raven, they're like, oh, let's put him together with Raven. I don't know who booked that way. I'm sure it wasn't quite Raven, but, you know, still, he got the chance to learn from him. He got to work Terry Funk on, you know, an old TNA pay-per-view, like stuff like that. Like, he had to work with a lot of different people back then. So
ROH, yeah, too, just, he got to work with Funk.
Well, Funk and ROH, like, all that stuff. What a time. Like, that's the way you learn. You work with, to get to work with guys like that. Like, I never work with Terry. I never work with Funk, working with Raven. But, you know, you listen, you hear things. Okay, I do this, I do that. All the great people I've gotten to work with, you know. Just, you'd be silly not to latch onto that and build. And each building, each one was a building block for him. Each one, just to get where he wanted to be.
Does Punk give you credit, though? Because that's awesome for your resume. You know, hey, by the way, I'm a trainer. I also train one of the most popular guys, especially one of the most popular guys of the 2000s.
He does, 100% he does. He certainly did in his cauliflower speech. We'd be, you know, we're more buddies. We've just always been friends. Because as a coach, back then, I wasn't in coach mode. Not now. We're like, I see somebody from the performance center, like, oh, coach, like, he doesn't call me coach. Like, it just never was that way. But, you know, we were always, I've never had that demeanor about me. And I still kind of don't, you know, like, you know, I am your coach. No, he gives me a lot of credit, always has, you know. I mean, he gives me credit by just working and the things that are, it's the not, I always call it the unsolicited compliment. Like, I'm not asking for it. And, you know, the back in the day, he just send me a thanks for trading me when he's winning a world title, you know, stuff like that, like just insider stuff. That's way a long time ago. But right. But now the credit for like things when we got to work together in the AEW days, just to finish up and do stuff and just look and just to shake hands and go, man, we made some good stuff tonight, you know, as a producer for him. And he's always, you know, he's not so big that he doesn't ask for ideas from everybody, you know. He turns around and says, what do you think of this? Do you like this? Throw me an idea. And he might take it and use it, or he might not. You know, it really depends. But no, yeah. He's given me so much credit. I will definitely take, I have on my, I have a video, a training video I had a couple of years ago just for seminars, which I've now branded workshops. But I'll have that quote. It'll be up for the wrestling school and, you know, I'll use the same endorsement because it was a perfect endorsement about giving him the foundation of professional wrestling, which is coincidentally the name of my school. But he used that term, the foundation in his endorsement for me. So no, there's him continuing and being happy in pro wrestling is just, that's a huge endorsement to me, you know?
I know we were saying this before we got on. I was saying that sucks that he got hurt because, man, he was like one of the reasons I kind of got back super rich. I mean, it was interesting. I like Cody and the story and all this other stuff, but he really got me when he showed up at Survivor Series. I was pumped. I'm like walking out of the room. I think the show's over, and I hear that music. I ran back in because they closed the show. I mean, they tricked me. You know what I mean? Like Michael Cole did this, see you next week or, you know, whatever. And like that got me. So as soon as I heard he was at MSG, I'm like, oh my God, it's his first back match at MSG, 10 years. I got to go. And it was electric there. And the merch stand literally looked like it was like a riot happened and they ransacked the merch stand. So wow. he was a huge seller that day. And there were so many, I mean, there was so much Punk shirts going in, the old ones and whatever. So when he came back, I was so pumped that he was back. But then when he got hurt, I'm like, no, it just sucked.
Yeah. Huge heartbreaker. You know, I wanted to see him make that run to WrestleMania to the point where I kept thinking, should I go? You know, I love watching wrestling from home because I don't have to see people bouncing in and out of me or, you know, whatever. I'm sure I would have had great seats, but a great viewing, you know, platform there, but, you know, place to view it. But just a killer. All I can think about is the comeback is going to be even more special. You know, we have a nice reason for it happening. We have Drew McIntyre taking credit for it. Such a heel storyline, elevating Drew McIntyre to this just dirty son of a bitch that prayed for you to get hurt. Like, oh, what a line. They gave him that. He now has a dragon to slay when he comes back. Like, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for your head. So when the time is right, the place is just going to unload. And yeah, it's an unfortunate thing, but he's on the comeback trail. He's been rehabbing. He's putting it up on Instagram. You're seeing him rehabbing like crazy. Like, he will be back, and he won't come back less than 100%. That's for sure. He won't rush it. Nobody's rushing him back. They're giving him the time to heal. He will heal, and he'll come back even better. Because I can tell you what, he doesn't want to do just an in and out thing. He loves wrestling. He loves the sport. He loves where he's at right now. He loves just what he's doing. He loves the atmosphere. He just loves everything about it. So he's, you know, all systems are a go. And once his body is ready, once that arm is ready, and it's a crazy thing that it's not the same arm. I don't know if anyone's recognized it. It was his left arm the last time. This one was his right arm. So it's the opposite one, you know. And shit like that happens. Like, I tore a bicep out of nowhere. Just tore it. It just snapped. And I'm like, wow, I guess after all this time in a wrestling match. And the left one almost went too. Like, you got it, you know, just somebody pulled on it. And I'm like, holy cow, like, we've got a, you know, just our bodies, the wear and tear. And mind you, I haven't taken near the amount of bumps he's taken over the years. But yeah, just unfortunate. But he'll be back. I'm excited for the comeback.
Me too. DM Hunk, as he's calling himself now, McIntyre. He's in trouble when Punker comes back. Yeah, just McIntyre just doing a great job with it, because even when Punk came out with the sling on, I thought that was great old school stuff. He stomped on the arm that was injured. Everyone gasped, like, man, that's just perfect old school storytelling. I love that stuff.
It still works. It still works.
Yep. That's why I love watching Punk wrestle too, because so many guys today, they think like, oh, if I do, you know, 10 Hurricane Ranas and whatever that Canadian destroyer, if I do a million of them, like, I like his, even when he was working Dom at MSG, slow it down, the psychology, get some heat on Dom, you know what I mean? Like, I just love that style much more than the just, oh, let's just do stuff for pops. I hate that stuff.
Oh no, like, there's so much. Again, Harley Race wrestling, man. This is what I'm teaching. Like, you don't, what I taught at my workshop the other day, like, everything they did, everything they did the other night with that kickoff show, making it feel real and giving you just a little, making, just tweaking that just a little bit, you know, The Rock wasn't as hokey as he is with, I'm in, him saying a rhyme, like, no, he was a little pissed. Like, you don't talk about my family. You fix this bullshit, you know, blah, 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 blah. Just a little bit of swearing done, nothing too crazy and off color, but it gave that big fight feel to everything. And again, and it may seem biased, especially, I would say this in the workshop, I said, you guys are going to think I'm biased, but I'm going to start quoting moments for you that got people out of their chairs and got them interested. Everything that makes you feel real, this plays into what I'm teaching you today. You know, like this type of match, like, take your own bump outside the ring. Everything's on fire. When you throw a clothesline, it's not, you know, it's not back here. You're going to duck. You're going to duck. No, you throw that sucker. And if someone doesn't duck, it's their head. But the heat, the spots, the placement of everything, like, smart wrestling still works. Don't negate the crowd. Don't negate the selling, you know. It's funny that I'm at this point, because I was one of those guys that would have tried to do too many moves at one point in our career. We all were that way. All of us were. And then you get to a certain point and you realize, holy shit, we've had it all wrong. We've had it all wrong. Like, that's why the old timers say, no, slow it down even more. Do less. Do less and give more out of your emotions and everything else. Like, come on. He hasn't wrestled in front of a crowd, except for MSG, but a live television appearance, it's a Royal Rumble. What were the ratings for the speaking moments? Because every time he had a speaking engagement on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the ratings were just up. Yep. You know, they're up to hear two people talk, and people are hanging on every word. Happened at the other place too. You know, when I had a promo with Punk in ring, when I, you know, gave him the Rocky III speech.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know, I had big shoes to fill. Shit, he's my student, but man, I'm talking, I am delivering a promo to the great, you know, one of the greatest talkers of modern times, and I got to make it sound authentic. And there was a lot of authenticity in it, and I played off, you know, authentic things that had happened to us, but still, it's the delivery. You have to deliver it the way they deliver their dialogue. It doesn't sound rehearsed anymore. There's bullet points. It's their verbiage. I mean, what would you say to someone day in, day out? And it sounds like a natural conversation, but a naturally heated conversation, like him and Cody. Holy cow. You know,
awesome.
Great. Yep. Just wow. And they didn't take one bump.
Yep. It's funny. I never really lately go back and listen to promos. Like back in the day, Austin, The Rock going back and forth. Like, I'll watch that a million times or something. But Cody and Punk, I had to go back and watch it. That was awesome. I love that back and forth. Like, he's like, you're more like CM Punk, or I'm more like CM Punk. He's like, well, I'm Cody Rhodes. I'm the real American. You know what I mean? Like, that was great. It's like real good, because it's like, wow, what could they do to get you really interested in the Rumble? It's like, shit, I hope these two are the final two guys in the Rumble, because I can't wait till they face off. Yeah, great stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm more the American dream than you are. I'm more CM Punk than you. Holy. Yep. Like, I was... So those are the days people like to know if I know, like, I know things.
Right.
I just know they put stuff together. I go, how is it looking? You know, if we talk, if he's not that busy, you know, sometimes I'll find out that, yeah, you know, got it together. Cool. But I don't know what's, I don't want to know. That's the fun part. I don't want to know. I want to see it happen. Believe it or not, in 2011, when I sat there watching the Money in the Bank match with John Cena,
yep,
I didn't know the finish. I was there all day hanging out. I think I was hanging out talking to Regal and various other people. But when I sat down for that show to start, as I'm watching the matches, it occurred to me, I didn't know the finish. And I went, oh, wait, I don't want to know. I want to watch it. And though I'm not a fan, I wanted to be surprised whichever way it went. You know, I still want to be that way. I like being, that is the only, like that promo the other night, the way it did, the way it ran, even with Drew, like that stuff, like when he had that line, I prayed for you to get, for your injury, you know, for you to get hurt. Yeah. Oh man, I was howling just like everybody else. Like, oh my God, that was phenomenal. You know, the stuff that just like my favorite movie, is Heat, you know, Pacino and De Niro. Oh, top God, the dialogue over and over and over. Punker's favorite, too. A good friend of our, Ralph, who does buildings at in New York. It's just that movie, like the dialogue, the way it's delivered, the way they deliver that dialogue, man, takes me out of everything that's going on. I'm there, you know. So that's the type of stuff. And again, into my workshop, I was like, guys, if that didn't tell you, guys and girl, we had a girl there, too. This doesn't show you that realism is on the forefront. Like, you can suspend disbelief. Every person in this crowd, they know it's not 100%. They know it's predetermined, but you take them out of knowing that, you know, they're at the show. Give them a show where they don't go, oh, look at the wrestling move. Oh, yeah. Look at the tumble. Nah, man, they are engaged. That engagement.
Were you rooting for De Niro or Pacino?
I'm a Pacino fan, but you know what? It was actually legit when I saw that in the theater in 95. It was the first one I'd ever seen in surround sound as well, because I can remember distinctly hearing silverware in the diner scene going cling, cling. What the hell? Like the surround sound. First time I'd ever been in a theater with surround sound. I rooted for the heel. They made me root for the heel. I rooted for De Niro to get away from Pacino. Love Pacino all the way around, but I want the heels, the skirt, you know? I want them out of there.
Yeah, like Val Kilmer, please get away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He got it. Oh, I cannot tell you how much I'm waiting on the book, the Heat 2 book. Oh, I can't.
Yeah, Michael Mann's been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, I think it's coming. It's coming.
That's awesome.
They've confirmed it's coming. There's a, hate to put out, but I don't mean to talk about other podcasts here, but the Rewatchables podcast. They base a lot of their ratings on Heat itself. And I could listen to that one over and over when they talk to Michael Mann. He's like, and they were like, so what if you had the chance to do it for Netflix? And boy, he scoffs at that. No, it should be done, you know, cinematic, not in freaking parts. Like, I think he more or less said, you can fucking kill me. I don't want to do that. I need to make an epic movie to the best of my ability. So.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not good to do a sequel or a prequel of something that good, because it's like you're never going to live up to that. It's going to be hard.
Very, very true. Very true. But if you read the book, the beauty of the book is you sit there and it's written in their voices, like the dialogue that's in the book. And you could just hear it out of a young Pacino, out of, you know, the young De Niro character, like out of Neil McCauley. Like, you just read it. You could just see him as a young version of himself. Like, you just, like, the dialogue, like, it just all writes itself. It's so perfect. Much like The Watchmen. I'm not a huge comic to movie, like, I don't go to comparisons too much unless it's just completely awful and they screwed an origin up. But the Watchmen graphic novel versus the Watchmen movie was so spot on to me. You know, like it's written there. Just take it and put it there. That's what likely he'll do with this. And, you know, I'm sure he finds the right cast for sure.
Watchmen, damn good movie too. Very good.
Yes. Yes. This became the movie review.
Yeah. Next, you got to watch The Usual Suspects with
Gabriel Byrne. I've been talking about this for a while, yeah.
Go on, that's awesome. That movie's great. Now, as far as Punk, like with his promos and stuff, like you're saying, ratings go up here, ratings go up there. AEW, obviously, the ratings were where they were. They were a lot higher than they are now. WWE, you could see his quarter hour ratings are getting up to 2 million. You know, they're higher than the rest of the show plateauing. Even when he's cutting promos behind the scenes that maybe weren't really supposed to be promos, they're awesome, and people rewatch him and rewatch him and rewatch him. Where does he, like, learn the gift of gab? If you, is that him? Is that something like you could actually teach in like promo class per se? Or is that something like from here? Do you know what I mean? Or is that just coming out?
All the above. I mean, mainly it's from here and it's his gift of gab. The one promo of my life that I cut that was, you know, that I feel like I did super well on. That's the only promo I cut that's ever been worth a damn. I feel like I can cut a better promo now than I could ever when I wrestled. I just never focused on that. That's always been in him, from studying a young Roddy Piper, from studying Piper from back in the day, and not the off the handle, you know, coconuts, you know, Roddy Piper, like the little goofiness of him, but just the way he talks and engages you on camera. It's him 100% because he can talk to you with conviction. He can speak to you, and you know, it's a little bit of, dare I say, when Jake Roberts would just talk to you and he could look through the camera at you.
Yep.
He's just watched the greats, and he's learned from Dusty. He sat in promo class with Dusty, you know, down at OVW. Dusty'd come down and look at him, and you know, he would tell me like, how's OVW today? He's like, oh, we had Dusty down. He's like, and he had worked with Dusty on the indies.
Yeah.
So there's pictures he'll pull up and he's like, I'm like, when the fuck were you in a War Games with? He's like, I was in with Dusty, and there's Carino somewhere, and all this stuff. I was like, wait. And he goes, look, there's Harley in the corner. I'm like, what match was this? You know, I don't remember any of this stuff. Of course, again, two different paths. We were still buddies, but we didn't, you know. Yep. That's when he had gone to Philly and just started bouncing around. But, you know, he said Dusty came to OVW once to look at him and said, this kid, Harley Race, loves this kid. He loves this kid right here. Dan Harley Race loves your ass. And you know, you just listen to Dusty, and there's so many great Dusty promos out there where he's not flip-flopping, flying all over, where he's just speaking to you. Like, I mean, Punk has worked with the best guys and just learned from them and listened to them. You know, Raven's promos were revolutionary with the quote, the Raven ever, when he reinvented himself and came into ECW. Yep. Those were revolutionary, all that stuff, you know. Every person that's ever touched his career has left that with him as he goes on, and he takes and learns, and not takes as in a greedy take. Like, he takes what's given to him and moves on, just like with Eddie Guerrero, just being touched by him for a moment in his career and dropping, you know, he's just grabbed all of that and moved and moved and moved and studies.
Gotta be a sponge.
You have to be a sponge. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it's here, but it's also being savvy enough to grab from around you in the world and all the legends, you know.
What about your promo with Chad Collier? You said, Chad, if I find you in the grocery store, if you're at the gym, I'm going to kill you, Chad. Like, that was an awesome promo back in the day when you and Chad Collier refuting an ROH.
Oh yeah, I've been looking for that. I can't find it. I'm sure it's on the DVD somewhere. I couldn't find it or not. That was, again, when you're backed against the wall, the best things come out. You know, like Second City Saints were doing a lot. Here's the whole story: is basically, I had been going to Japan a lot. I've gotten to go, and every time I went on a Noah tour, it would be where Ring of Honor things were happening. So I missed a lot when Ring of Honor started ramping up, running. Check this out. I missed a Chicago match where I would have teamed with Cabana, managed by Bobby Heenan, against maybe the Prophecy. I don't remember who it was exactly, but they were managed by Cornette on the other side. And Jimmy Jacobs took my place. And I remember just going, ah, oh, fuck. I was like, but I got Japan. And telling Gabe, I got Japan. I missed like two of those events where Cornette was on one side, Heenan was on the other, but Heenan in Chicago. So as time went on, so if that was 06, Punk was gone, and I needed something to do in Ring of Honor. So I created my own angle with, well, the last night, the summer of Punk was 06, but he was on his way out. So the Saints had just been done. So Gabe had me in a match with Chad Collier, who is such a superb wrestler. And I created my own business that night by doing an accidental too much juice job. So I basically bled a bucket, you know, and Paul Tarter and I talked about this a little while back. He's like, you remember when you bled everywhere? I was like, yeah, thanks a lot, Paul. And Paul was standing there going, I think you cut an artery. I didn't fucking cut an artery, Paul. Just shut up. Just let me lay here. I'll be all right. And he's got his blood all over me, all over his hands. I'm like, get my blood off you. Go wash your hands, dude. Like, I didn't mean for this to happen. I meant to get some juice, but not like this. But it set us off on an angle. Again, I cut that in my gym that I had at the time, right next door to Harley's. And I needed business. I needed work. Like, Gabe would give me work, but he didn't have me figure it in anywhere. So I had to create my own. So that at least gave me something to do with Chad and Chasen. Yep. So yeah, somehow. Okay, so there you go. There's another one I had. One of my other good promo.
Yes.
My
yes,
other
I know.
Good promo. Yeah. Yeah.
Love that promo.
And thankfully I had my own video camera at the time where I could videotape that we used to take the shows and record ourselves. Yeah, wow. I forgot all about that really.
Yeah, that was good times back then.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Now, were you ever officially signed to OVW, WWE at one point?
Oh, yeah.
As far as, so you were, right? Okay. So how did that go, and how did, like, how long were you signed for?
It was about a year. So what happened was, it was all the fake Rosie versus fake Donald Trump.
Yes. Love that. Yes.
And I always say it is, be careful what you wish for, number one, and I'll explain that in a minute, but 2006, which is all the Chad Collier stuff and everything, I would say at that point for my pro wrestling career, I was as complete of a wrestler as I could be for getting to the next stage of, I need higher learning, as I call it now. And I say that as in when I produce a match and something, I need something here, I'll go ask a producer who's been around longer or bounce it off of somebody like a Jerry Lynn or Talk to Fit or Terry Taylor. Like, I call it higher learning. I want to do this, but what do you think? You know, you're on the right track or don't go this way. So as a worker at that point, frame, body, look, everything, what do you got for me? Like, I'm going to WWE when they're in town. As far as size goes, I remember standing next to Benoit once and looking at him and going, I'm as big as he is. Like, size-wise, everything. If he's here, what can I do? Not saying I was, you know, that caliber of worker, but I'm trying. Everything for me that year should have been it. And as I'm chasing that year, even with another tour of Japan, which I treated like my last. And I came back from Japan. Harley told me, you're going back. I said, okay, sweet. That's in 07. But I started really focusing on my gym. And I started winding down wrestling because I thought, okay, what's left for me? There's all these giant, I'm the same size as Benoit, but they have a Benoit. They have a guy that size. Do they need me? What do I have? Again, I actually didn't have a great promo. So I know my mic work isn't great. And camps happen. There's a WWE camp. Harley always did his Harley camp. So I worked many a Harley camp, either teaching the camps, starting with the first one with Ricky Steamboat and Les Thatcher, and myself and Trevor Murdoch were the wheels for whatever they needed. We ran and then helped, you know, multiple camps after that. And at that point, I couldn't get hired by WWE. You know, I sent the tape in. Ted DiBiase, he vaguely remembers this, but he took a liking because his boys were down there at Harley's training, and Harley would have me go in and work with them to try to get their first match together. Teddy took a great liking to me, and the senior, and he started trying to help me out to get hired, and it just wasn't happening. It just wasn't happening. So 07 comes, and Mike Bucci, who had just actually came down for the last Harley camp in 06. 07, he calls up with the whole Donald Trump thing. And off of that is what got me hired. Like, I did the Donald Trump thing, hit a home run with it. That's what the old man wanted. And the next night, they wanted to see me in a dark match. And a week later, I got a phone call to be shipped off. I was at Deep South for maybe a month before they shut down. I was there the night they shut down and tore all the rings out and all that good stuff. And but I had hurt my knee. I had tweaked my knee, but I didn't know how bad it was. And I really tore it apart when I was wrestling. I hip tossed a real guy who was 280 pounds. This guy by the name of Keith Walker. And I could have just let him go. But it was in me to at least get him over. And I think he might have landed on his head had I not like tried to. When I muscled him over, 280 pounds, and bent my knee to the side, and it ripped my ACL to shreds. And so injured right away. Right in the developmental, injured right away. And I was under Dr. Tom at the time. And then ended up in OVW and ended up coming back exactly 6 months later after surgery. And mind you, I rushed it because my knee hurt like hell. But all I could think about was, I have to get to work. I don't want to be one of those guys that's just, I was dying to wrestle, all that good stuff. And it just wasn't meant to be. So that's the careful what you wish for. You always want to be nominated. Man, I could have been that guy. Give me a chance. I was 34 at the time. So for their age limit at the time, it was no bueno. It was too late for me. Had I been 30, had I also, instead of OVW, when Deep South closed, had I gone to Florida, likely would have had a better chance. My actual hometown was still Eldon, Missouri, where Harley's school is at the time. So it was Louisville was closer to the home. So going to Florida would have just really crazed out the world there a little bit. So is what it is. I wouldn't be where I am now with everything happening if all that didn't happen the way it did.
Now, as far as Deep South closing, did Johnny Ace have you show up in like your nice clothes and basically take the place apart? Because I know a bunch of the guys are complaining that, why didn't you tell us we're there like to close the place down? We're like wearing decent clothes. We're like ruining our clothes here.
I think so. I think it was protocol. You knew you were supposed to be there for a meeting. And I was on crutches. I actually was traveling back from Alabama that day from Birmingham from going to see Dr. Dugas with my knee. Had an update to see how things were. So we got back, changed, and then lo and behold, the place closed. So, but I got to have a beer at Brad Armstrong that night. So that's one of my fondest memories. Brad Armstrong is one of the greatest workers of all time. I employ every wrestler out there. If you're listening to this, go watch him. I wholeheartedly give shit to Scott and Brian Armstrong, Road Dogg, every time I see them, because I'll look at them and say, Brad was the best one, right? And they both agree. Oh, yeah, duh. But I just like to give him shit. But Brad was one of my favorites. And the fact that I got to see him there, learn from him a little bit, and just lock up with me, Brad. And I'm like, locking up with Brad Armstrong. Like, legit, no joke, is like in my top five of wrestlers that I'll study just the way he works. I got to have a beer with Brad Armstrong at Hooters that night after the place closed. And just to listen to him tell jokes and just be him was just a cool experience. So it all happened for that. I guess that's one of the reasons I got to hang out with Brad Armstrong.
Imagine if Brad could talk like Brian or Brian could work like Brad. Imagine that combination there.
Crazy. Yeah, it would have been crazy. Yeah, I still think Brad could have been. They say like his personality obviously was a lot different on screen than it was behind the scenes, but I like this seriousness. I think they still would have done fine. He was just, I don't know. They just never gave him that shot to put him, as far as talking goes, he was definitely better. When you go for the Dusty regime of back then, like you had him and Magnum, and then you knew they liked Sam Houston, so he was on the up and comer. You know what I mean? Then Sam Houston defects to WWF back then. So then he got a guy like Brian Armstrong still floating around. I thought he could talk way better than, say, a Sam Houston or any Tim other Horner. Tim Horner. Yeah, definitely better than his Lightning Express partner. Like, he'd have been a great TV champion. I thought he'd been just fine in there. Just whatever they didn't, no matter what anyone says, I personally think he would have been fine because he could still speak. He was articulate. And I think with the fire behind him, he would have had a little more bullet bob in him.
Yeah. Yep. I was just talking to Scott Armstrong not that long ago, and he was mentioning that he was just kind of being like the white meat baby face, and they didn't really tell him, like, it'd be a character. Like, yeah, kind of be like that old school white meat baby face. So he never really kind of was given the platform to, like, kind of do more, really.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, is what it is. I still revere him, though. Scott knows how I feel about him. Scott's a good friend. He's a family friend, and he helped Lucy out a lot when she was reffing and stuff. And but he would always, man, he'd help me out so much at the PC when I was down there, just helping to learn producing and stuff like that, and to understand terms that I'd never heard before, because TV's a different world. And but yeah, man, just stuff about Brad. Funny enough, the Armstrong family, the first TNA pay-per-view that Punk and I did, the first time we'd ever appeared on pay-per-view, Scott was our ref. If he wasn't a ref, he was there that night. But Bullet Bob was around, and so was Tracy Smothers, happened to be at that show. And wow. Tracy's a huge part of all our careers. And but his association, you know, with the Armstrong family and teaming with Steve, but just to have an Armstrong around is a pretty cool thing.
Hey, the Young Pistols, the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys are a hell of a team. Southern Boys.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. Great stuff, awesome. Midnight Express. Oh, yeah.
I always bust Dr. Tom's balls, and I say that not only was Brad way better than you, Stan Lane was better than you, Jimmy Del Rey was better than you.
Oh, that's great.
My buddy Lash LaRue, too, he always talks about Brad, said he was like his mentor in WCW towards the end of the time.
So I've seen that, and I don't know him. I may have met him once way back when, but I see that he and Dr. Tom go, I think, maybe every year to Brad's grave. Yep. And so I don't know Lash LaRue, but I love him for that. Because I know I would have latched on to Brad Armstrong had I been around him more too. So that's awesome. That's very awesome.
Yeah, very, very cool. As we wind it down, we head towards the finish here. Tell me about the foundation. Tell me all about what's going on, the training and everything you're doing down there.
So the Foundation of Professional Wrestling, focusing on Harley Race training. We're going to utilize the methods he has bestowed upon me over the years. It started really out of the workshops that I had been doing. Of course, started doing more and more workshops. Once I stopped coaching at the PC, what do you do as a wrestler if you feel like you want to go out and do it? I don't call them seminars. I call them workshops because we actually do. I make everybody work in the ring. I want you to leave with some nugget, something different that you, whether you can take it all in that I throw at you, because our wrestler brains, we throw so much stuff at you all at once and we go off in so many different directions. but I work you to death sometimes. I like to run you. I like to show you, you know, things, how hopefully you're viewing them as, or give you a different idea of how to do something in the ring. But it comes down to the foundation of professional wrestling. A couple of years ago, I wrestled for a place in Kansas City, and we called our little faction the Foundation, and it actually utilizes the same logo. So that would be well before any foundation came in any other, like Ring of Honor had their version. Like, we were the Foundation on a local level. So as time went on, even in the AEW days, like I love coaching. I love coaching. What got me back into wrestling was coaching at the Performance Center. I love working with wrestlers. I've worked with so many, and now, and you figure that was a couple, 3 years ago now. Now a lot of them are going up and working, you know, national TV, and I'll hear from Punk and I'll hear from Adam Pearce, you know, hey, so-and-so says hi, you know, they ask about me. And that means a lot, because I did my best to help them. And that lets me know that, you know, I left a little imprint on them that they still think of me. In AEW, we had access to a ring, and I used to train people on the off days from traveling. I just could not get away from working with people in the ring. People asked me for help, and I would love to help. And finally came down to, gosh, I wish I had a ring. I wish I had a ring. I wish, you know, and I haven't had a school since 2002. There hasn't, you know, I haven't properly had my own place. And I finally just pulled the plug on it and said, you know, pulled the trigger and decided to open up my own school, the Foundation of Professional Wrestling, you know, specializing in Harley Race training. I am ready to teach somebody from the ground up. I'm ready to give them everything that a guy like Harley gave me, all the things, all the lessons I've learned over the years to hopefully craft, you know, the next generation, you know, give guys, you know, I created a school way back when with my high school buddy, Danny Dominion, because we wanted a place to train for us to better ourselves. So we bought our own ring. Well, screw it. Let's open a school. And if people come along and want to train, you know, so be it. Well, look what we created out of that. And that just spawned a lot of things. It spawned a career. You know, CM Punk probably would have been great anywhere he went, but he came through us. And we learned together. We, you know, we taught him what we knew, and then we went on to learn together and learn as time went on and have all these experiences together, and got to create some magic together too, way back then. And you know, and you know, the not too distant, you know, past, we created like some magic together. I want to bring this to the wrestlers. I want to bring such a foundation. I've noticed that a lot of things are missed out of people that I've seen at a lot of places I've worked with. I've worked with Derby City Wrestling, the United Wrestling Network under Dave Marquez. I've worked, you know, of course, in the last few years, right now I'm with TNA. Everyone gets trained in different places, but I feel like some of the basics and the foundation that was given to me, you know, all the old timers I've searched through and gone through, when we were independent wrestlers, we searched out those people. I searched out a camp with Dave Taylor, which is how I met, you know, William Regal. I searched that information. I want to bring that information to everyone else. Rip Rogers will say, shout out to Coach Rip Rogers. Met him in the last year. What a great dude. He will say that he didn't make any of this up. You know, he's just passing on what people have handed him. And that's what I'm doing. And I'm doing it in my way to articulate to you. I also, branding it Harley Race Training, I'm going to bring some merchandise along with it. You know, you'll see some different t-shirts in the world. I want to get a different look at Harley coming through. You know, we've had the same old pictures and things of him through the years. I'm going to bring some stuff along with that. And with all of that, I plan on, once I get things up and running, you know, running something where I find the opportunity to give someone a Harley Race scholarship and give a young professional wrestler the chance to learn. You know, times are tough and tuition's tuition. You know, I can't give it away for free. You have to run a business. But yep, I would love to be able to do that and work something with the merchandise that I'm going to sell, utilizing, you know, the Harley Race trademark that I've acquired, to go ahead and give that back to our business. And that's really what this is. The foundation of professional wrestling, I'm formulating it to give back to our business. Again, it's a business, but it's a business that's lost so much over the years. And I want to do my best to give that back and hand it off. Regal was near the ring one day and he was doing something and he was like, oh, Ace, he's like, this, this, and this. And he looks over at the people he was talking to. He's like, I'm giving this to Ace, because he goes, what if I'm not standing here? I can't, you know, he's going to give that knowledge. Or he'll just look at me and go, you've already heard this from me. I'm like, yes, I know. And back and forth, you know, I want to give that back to the people out there. I want to get them ready. I'm going to be located not far from the Performance Center here in Orlando, the physical operation. You're getting ready for a tryout. I helped run many a tryout. I was there for so many of them. So many of the people that you see on TV now, I'll laugh and I'll go, I remember when she was or he was in the tryout that day. I remember Bron Breakker's tryout when he came in. You know, you look up and you go, well, there's a Steiner. He's an in. He's, that's a shoe in. Like, look yeah. at him. He's already, we're hiring him. But I helped run those and help craft the drills that we run. Some of these drills I bring to my workshops. But there's other things to do to like, get you to think and to be smarter and to be a, you know, try to help you advance quicker. But if you want to come down, I'm going to get the pricing up on the website, the foundation of pro wrestling. You can, my Aces of Steel, Instagram will have all the links on there and you can link to it as well as the websites and everything. But the foundation of pro wrestling, professional wrestling, it will help get you there as quick as I can get you there in the smartest way possible. But I'm going to give you the tools. I'm going to give you all the tools I can, everything that I've learned over all these years, and hand that back to you and put you in a proper spot for this industry.
I love that. If you're close by to the Performance Center and that's where you want to be eventually, train with you, get you ready. So when they, you know, have that moment where they might go to the PC, might get a tryout, actually get signed instead of getting deny, turn away, and then have to start the process all over again. So might as well train with somebody who's experienced it first, get them ready for that point, and then onward, upward.
I've got you ready. Like I said, I'm going to run. Like, there's some people that just, you know, I've had plenty of people contact me lately. Hey, I can't make your workshop. Where can I train with you? Give me time. I'll have my ring up. I've got this going. I'm going right now. I've got people, you know, messaging me. I said, I'll have a ring up shortly. You'll be able to come in. If you only have a few days to come down to Orlando, it's a nice, easy spot to get a plane ticket. We can work out private one-on-one, you know, tutoring sessions and I did that for a little bit before. But I'm going to work on doing that. You know, you can get more in-ring focus with me where I can work on you. That's one of the things I find at workshops is that it's hard to sometimes narrow it down. I like some workshops I do, I'll watch a show and then I can critique the show and critique each match because each wrestler's different. Each wrestler needs a little something different. It's not a blanket statement that you guys are all not doing this or doing that. You can't just use that shotgun blast. So you could come down and do a one-on-one. I will offer international rates. I know a lot of students come from overseas and they can only come down here for a short period of time. We can work out a rate for that and do a small camp for that. I know that happens quite a bit. So I'm opening that idea for sure to people to come down and train with me. I mean, I'm actively going to TNA at the moment and I'm actively producing, you know, around the US. So I see the different trends. I see the trends that aren't working out. I see the trends that everyone's doing that we need to change so you can stand out. And I guarantee you, no matter where you want to work, I'm going to give you that foundation so that way there is no hidden secret. You know, what everyone's, if you have this and you expand upon these things and keep this work ethic and these core things that I give to you in your wrestling, you're going to be able to work every promotion that, and adapt as opposed to something niche.
When did you actually start with TNA? And you're just basically agent producer?
Agent producer at the moment. Yes, sir. I started with them in October. It was a funny courting session. Like they had asked for me before, but went back to work at another place and just little bit of phone tag here and there and finally got to go. And there's so many people there that I've either worked with or known of me over the years. So when I walked in there, I was welcomed with open arms. You know, Tommy Dreamer, who I've known for years, of chasing ECW to chasing WWE to Lou DeAngeli, who was Sign Guy Dudley that works there behind the scenes. He is just simply a friend, but known of him for years being around the industry. He was done marketing in a lot of different places. But he ended up there in marketing. There's so many agents there and so many different people that, or we know the same people, you know, or the workers. When I saw Alex Shelley, you know, just a giant hug. Saw Mickey James, actually her last shows before she took her hiatus for Chicago. And I had just seen her at Cauliflower. And the last time I'd seen her was actually at the Performance Center years earlier. Like I just run into her in these intervals. And it was so good to see her. And she's like, I'm so happy you're here. I'm like, thank you so. And like, I'm just so happy to be in just a place that's, again, that's hungry, that's on the cusp of, like, you watch these shows and thinking if we can get the exposure to, you know, everyone to like put eyes on our product to see the pro wrestling that's going on there. Like it's great stuff, like from the knockouts division, like to, you know, just our heavyweights to the X division. The X division's hot. Gosh, you see that ABC tag team versus the Rascals? They're doing, pardon my French, they're doing shit I ain't never seen. And I love it. It's so, like, I put that up against anything in the world. It's good stuff. It's such good stuff.
Yeah, it seems like TNA is on a bit of a roll. I know the Scott D'Amore, a little bit of a controversy and maybe a little bit of hiccup right there, but seemed like on a big-time roll just as far as so much positive praise everywhere for TNA right now.
Huge positive praise. I mean, all the shows have been doing great business. In Vegas, the first Las Vegas show, the pay-per-view, coming back to haunt me. The highest grossing show in 10 years, the pay-per-view in Vegas. Oh my gosh, at the Palms. And then we're going back in on 420 to the Palms for another pay-per-view. Like just a great venue. just the venue was awesome. Like, it was such a great setup. And, you know, that's the team putting that together and putting together the show. And then, of course, your performers that go out and just give it all they got, you know, and you've got the crew is just top notch, like such a tight, like just a tight crew of like the precision of everything, the moving parts. Like, it's just phenomenal to see. Just phenomenal to see. I love structure. You have to have structure in this business. And the structure that they bring and the way the team, like you said, Scott DeMore is no longer with the promotion, and he was heart and soul. Everyone misses him. He was great to me. It's funny that we worked together for just a short time. We were trying to figure out where in the Indies had we worked together before. And we were picking out places, and I was like, no, not there, not there. We even thought we might have worked TNA together, which is possible that he was there.
Yeah.
Eric Young said the same thing to me. He says, you worked a friend of mine named Derek Wilde. I was like, holy cow, I did. And I think it was 02, the first year of TNA. But that had been the one and only time I had met Eric Young back then. But just the structure of the place and the way everybody wants to work together as a whole to make things go. If you can watch Access, TNA Explosion, the app, you can see some great stuff. The app actually has all the, you know, the catalog on there for all the old pay-per-views and just all the TVs and the highlight moments and stuff like that. So yeah, they're on a roll, man. We are on a roll, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And of course, we were mentioning this before too, about Punk, hopefully supportive of WrestleMania in some way. I know you didn't officially say it, but I was saying he should be the host of the show. I know you never said that. Yes.
I never said that. Don't quote him.
Yeah, I said it. He didn't say it.
That's right.
He's got to be part of the show. I know it would be awesome if he was. Obviously can't wrestle, but somehow a part of the show, just because he should be a part of it.
Maybe he'll be a part of like the backstage with Ron Simmons, where he says, "Damn, I don't know." Steamboat's in a dragon outfit. Maybe Punk's just in a punk rock. You know, he's got a mohawk, and Austin's got his mullet from the commercial. I'll tell you what I'm looking for. I saw Austin mention, I think I just saw it today, some interview he did where he was talking about, he said he headlined WrestleMania at 57, but he's feeling good. And he talked about wrestling Punk, and I want to see that. I've said this before somewhere, probably on the podcast I do with Lars and Dennis at the Wrestling Perspective podcast, but I want to see Austin and Punk. I think that's big business. I don't care if it's a SummerSlam. I don't care if it's whatever it is. Whatever pay-per-view they want to run, obviously a Mania main event for certain, but I would love to see that match. And I don't care what anyone says; it'll be hot. It'll be a hot brawl. It'll be a hot match. I'm such a fan of stunning Steve Austin. His matches with Ricky Steamboat, and so is Punk. Like, we used to watch those just religiously. But to see those two lock horns, it's a long time coming. I think it could still be done.
I would love it. I know they teased it like 10 years ago or whatever, maybe 12 years ago with that WWE 2K game. And he's talking about drinking, and he's talking about, I don't like it. You know what I mean? It was like the perfect dynamic. But it's funny, the guy that doesn't drink was the heel. The guy that does drink, what I mean? Very interesting dynamic with those two. I love it, though.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great stuff. Yeah, I pulled all that stuff up just to rewatch it. I was like, oh, man, this should happen. But hopefully at some point.
And I remember when he first came back, Punk to WWE, people were like, oh, maybe he gets Steve Austin in for Mania. I'm like, oh, my God, that'd be amazing. Steve Austin. I was like, what the hell? That'd be great.
Thankfully, they didn't book that and pull the trigger, right? Because that would have been it would have been a shame had they started to get that going. Then Austin's ready to go, and then, shit happens like it did. So hopefully we get that chance.
Now, we don't really know the matches for Mania, which is interesting, but the ratings have every week are like skyrocketing. Last week, SmackDown was 2.6 or 2.7 million. So it's like funny. It's like we don't really know the matches and stuff, but people's interest is going up and up. People are interested.
It's kind of like the equivalent of the old days when they would cut off NWA when a hot match was happening, or they'd just get the Road Warriors and Dusty in there against the Horsemen. And well, I was sorry, we got to go. Like, one of those things. Like, oh, shit, I got to watch. Like, they've just raised the attention all across the board. And it's just great stuff. It's, I mean, the fact that you're like, you know, watching the Super Bowl, and congratulations to the Chiefs, Chiefs fan here. And, but to see the Super Bowl and see some wrestling on the Super Bowl, which is insane to me, you know, just the fact that they're everywhere. They're just everywhere. Just WWE is everywhere, Austin. Which is, yep.
Oh, Austin had a commercial. Jade Cargill had a commercial. And
Jade Cargill and Cena had a commercial. Of course, the belt. They were presented with the Super Bowl belt. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes is taking that everywhere he goes, which is actually a pretty sweet-looking belt, the Super Bowl belt they have. They created a Super Bowl belt to sell as well, but he has, like, the WWE championship with the side plates of the Chiefs. But, yeah, they're just – I mean, it's great for wrestling all around. It's great business for us. It's great for everybody, I think, you know, to have eyes on this. So, you know, like, especially where Anthem has taken over with TNA and merged it more, you know, to start using the wrestlers in different capacities on the different shows that they do and all that stuff. I mean, that's just great business. It's smart business all the way around to do stuff like that. You know, just like back in the day, you used to see somebody on the USA shows. Like, what is the, what was the biking show that was the
show? Pacific Blue.
Pacific Blue. Wasn't somebody on Pacific Blue? Probably Triple H or somebody. Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Stuff like that. Like that, they should do that like all over the place. That's phenomenal.
Smart. And I knew the Chiefs were going to win. I mean, come on. Mahomes ain't losing to Brock Purdy. We know that. Come on.
Man, what a rough game. Oh, what a game.
That was crazy, yeah. But as soon as the 49ers only scored a field goal in overtime, I'm like, nope, he's going right down the field marching for a touchdown. It's over.
And I'll be honest, this will give me heat. I still think it should be sudden death. I was like, oh, they get it. Like, sure, we got an extra chance and we did it, but I was like, I honestly didn't know that was the rule. I was like, oh, really? I just always thought it was sudden death and something. I didn't read it into all the stuff that the reason why it changed, but I actually looked at my wife and said, it used to be sudden death. Like, I thought it would be sudden, you know, all right, well, we give him a chance, you know. So be it. We'll take the win.
Yeah, exactly. It's an unbelievable game. But again, give us all the social media plugs and where everybody can find you and the foundation.
At Aces of Steel, I don't do anything with my Twitter anymore. It just sits there pretty dormant. But I'm on Instagram Live and in effect, Facebook, Ace Steel. You can find me there. The links for everything at the Foundation Pro. Foundation Pro Wrestling is linked. I should have brought it up so I could see it exactly. It's linked off the Aces of Steel right there. It's in my links. And you can find information there, which also have information to the website. I do have a sign-up sheet there. Like I said, I'm doing advances to it each and every day, adding to it. I'm a novice at this at best. So we're getting this moving along, so you could go ahead and you know, subscribe for more information. Again, the Foundation Professional Wrestling here in Orlando, Florida, will be opening very soon, getting everything all together. A physical training facility down here, not far from the Performance Center, giving you specializing in Harley Race training, giving you everything I've learned from the man, Harley Race, all the things I've learned over the years, training CM Punk, working with Adam Pearce. I'll have the testimonials up. Adam humbly will say, I'll say this humbly, that he says, I've taught him more than I would ever take credit for. We had Lita come through our school back in the day at the Steel Domain. She was kind enough to give a shout out to me in her Hall of Fame speech. And just the people I've gotten to touch and work with over the years, you know, champion, I am a champion of women's wrestling. I'm so proud of Serena Deeb coming back and seeing people like that. Like, I'm excited to work with new women in the world, you know, getting into this and really, like, they're taking over the world of wrestling, man. And it's not just it to the fact where it's just wrestling, not a women's wrestler. They are just wrestlers, you know. Look at Becky, look at Bianca Belair, look at Zaya Brookside, Tasha Steeles, look at MK Ultra over there, Decay in TNA, like Mercedes Martinez, this caliber of women. Like, I'm excited to bring that next generation out into the world. And again, the things I've learned from William Regal, from a Fit Finley, working with Jerry Lynn myself, you know, getting to hand these down and train people this way. I'm excited to get in a ring one-on-one and work with people and get them up and running and help them craft a career like a CM Punk has had, like Adam Pearce has had. You know, you just see Adam Pearce right now is a official on television. Well, he's to me one of the last great traveling NWA champions. He took that belt and used it as a vehicle and worked all over the world. You know, folks like that on NXT, I've worked with, you know, Dante Chin, Grayson Waller recently got called up. The Creed brothers are called up. Ivy Nile, back to the women that I've worked with. Just so many great people that I want to bring this back. So the Foundation of Pro Wrestling here in Orlando, Florida. Find all the links at Ace Steel, Aces of Steel right there on Instagram. Excuse me. And I'm actively on there posting things all the time. Check out my workshops. Workshops coming up. I'll be in San Antonio in March. You can find the exact date. It's the weekend, I believe, of the 15th in between TNA pay-per-views. I'm going up to Remarkable Wrestling in April, as well as working on going to Beyond Wrestling to their school very soon. So we'll solidify those dates. So open for workshops when we can fit them in. I love hitting the road and traveling and bringing, you know, everything that I've just talked about from the physical school that will open down here. I'm looking for a busy year. Looking for a busy 2024.
Ace, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it. Great to finally get you back on.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Hey, I wanted to say a big thank you. You got me the Tully and Arn picture a long time ago. That's sitting over
yes.
here. I'm in the gimmick room. One day we would have to tour this room. I've never really toured it with anyone and show you where you're just in one corner where I've got Misawa and Harley stuff back there, but I've got so much stuff around here. But yeah, big thanks for that. That was a great thing that helped start putting the gimmick room together.
Yes, I remember that. Yes, I love still talk to them. They're the best, Arn and Tully.
Yeah, Arn. I love Arn. I love Arn and Brock. Great people. Great people I got to work with before. I used to agent, produce a lot of Brock's matches. So great group. I mean, it's very self-serving for me to get to know Arn, you know, but to work with Brock, like the next generation of Anderson. Legit, and you know he's got it. It'll come along, and it'll you're looking at a future great right there for sure.
Awesome.
Thanks, and the John. Next time, I appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. And next time we'll take a trip around the room.
Yes, indeed, we will. I'll have it set up and go, hey, here's all my dork stuff that I have.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Ace.
Thank you, brother.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.